Well, there are different types of stories that leaders have to have. One very important type of story is the everyday hero.
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. And perhaps the most important conversation, one-to-self. I'm your host, George Torok.
My guest today is Patricia Fripp. There's three important facts you should know about her. One, Patricia was the first female president of the National Speakers Association of the United States. Two, Kiplinger's Personal Finance wrote that learning presentation skills from Patricia Fripp is one of the best ways to invest in yourself. And three, her brother, Robert Fripp, is a rock star. He was the founder of King Crimson, and he was rated by Gibson's as number 47 on the top 50 guitarists of all time, a true rock star. In the world of professional speaking, Patricia Fripp is considered a rock star. Patricia, keynote speaker, executive coach, presentation skills trainer, welcome to Your Intended Message.
My pleasure, George. And may I begin by disagreeing slightly? It was Rolling Stone magazine that said Robert Fripp is the 42nd best guitarist in the history of the world, living or dead. However, he plays a Gibson, so that's okay. They love him as well.
Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you for setting that right, setting the record right, because if Robert's listening and he finds out...
He is always correcting his sister. That was off by 2 days or something like that.
Patricia Fripp, in the world of professional speaking, you are considered a rock star. I've watched you present many times, and I'm happy to proud to say that you have been a teacher, a mentor, and a coach to me on presentation. You often work with the leaders of organizations, executives, senior executives, and CEOs. And when you work with them, often you help them become a rock star within their own company or within their industry. What are the steps that you need to go through, that you go through with them to help them make that amazing transition?
And you're absolutely correct. And one client said to me, Patricia, our company doesn't have any rock stars. We want you to work with our president, and you hear it yourself, George, write him a speech, make him look like a rock star, and you got 4 hours. One point that I try and bring out is to go back to earlier in their lives to find out what was the moment that got them onto the path that they're now on. For example, one time I was brought in and the instructions were very much, we want you to work with our president. He's been here 10 years. He's only been president for 7 months. He's not a great speaker. No one sees him as a leader. However, they all see he's a team player and he's very ethical. But our company is at a challenging times and he needs to step up. And when I met with him, I said, how do you do? Everyone says you're a team player and you're very ethical. Tell me about your parents. And he talked about his parents. And then I said, you're interested in sports. What sports? He said, well, when I was 7 years old on the water polo team, they saw that I had leadership inclinations and they put me on the fast track for the Olympics. Now, I could not say to him, no one sees you as a leader. However, I made sure that that was an important part. And I had him tell me stories about training and going to the Olympics. And because, although he was not considered a good speaker, stories like this, he would have told his kids and at dinner parties for years. So as you know, George, if you can get people to begin their speech with 7 minutes of telling stories they've been telling at the dinner table, they're already off to a good beginning. They're in the flow, and that will carry them with the prepared remarks we help. With another, this was a gentleman who was new at Oracle. And I was trying to find the moment that statistics and what you can do with the information from statistics and strategy. And I went back to his earlier education, and he realized, and they all say to me, I would never thought about this. He got on the path that brought him to his leadership position and the career he had, because when he was in college, one of his professors, he was a new PhD, he wasn't that much older than the students, and because he was new, he was so enthusiastic and so passionate that he got excited about what he was teaching him about understanding statistics. So that got him on the path. And the woman who said, we want a rock, turn him into a rock star, was working with this wonderful man. And he was talking about strategy. And I said, Bernard, when was the first time you learned the importance of strategy? And he said, I was 14 years old, and I was a ball boy before the French Open. And when people came in, they didn't realize the ball boys were having a match. And I was playing against my best friend, and we were equally matched. However, in that case, the ball boy was his sister, and she wanted her brother to win. So the way she was throwing the balls were trying to sabotage my game. And he said, Patricia, that was the first moment I understood the importance of strategy. When you are equally matched with your opponent and you're at a disadvantage. And what all these leaders say to me, George, and I know they say to you, do people want to hear these personal stories? And I say yes, because you always have to show the person behind the position. People will respect your title as president, as senior vice president. However, when they see a snapshot of the person and they make more of an emotional connection, that's when they're likely to fight in the streets for you.
Patricia, at least two points jumped out at me there. One, the acknowledgement that the individual was competent and ethical, but not necessarily seen as a leader. And the importance that communication skills play in the role of a leader. A leader needs to be more than just smart and know how to do their job, but they actually need to be able to communicate and do it in a way that is better than the people around them.
Most definitely. And I was coaching a banker, and he was, I asked him a question, as we often do, George, and I knew the answer. I said, how well educated are you? And PhD, MBA, and all these professional accreditations. And I said, well, why are you such a sloppy speaker? And then, out of the power of our questions, see, you don't have to hold the answers, but you do have to ask good questions. And then he said, and again, a light bulb went off. He would never have been able to articulate it. He said, all the people who report to me, we were all in training together. And I said, and what you're trying to do with your sloppy language, you're toning down your message, is to be one of the guys. I said, you're not one of the guys. You are their leader, and you need to speak the way you're capable of speaking to model to them. If you want to elevate your career to where I am, this is how you speak and communicate. It's a disservice to try and speak down.
I find it fascinating, the power of stories and how it plays such a critical role in not only in business, but in our lives. We when we get together with friends, what do? We start telling a story. You talk about, oh, you wouldn't believe what happened last week. Or you know, that project I was working on, here's, you know, or I went on a date, or, you know, so we, and when we get into business, many managers, executives forget the power of stories, or they say, I don't have any stories to tell. And yet it could be as simple as saying, when was the first time when you were a little girl, when you were a little boy, what do you remember about? And so you now probe for those stories. And what other tips or techniques can you offer to people who are thinking, well, you know, I have to talk to the team next week. It's a quarterly meeting. What kind of story, or how do I find a story that's relevant? Because we got lots of stories, but they're not all relevant. How do we find that relevant story?
Well, there are different types of stories that leaders have to have. One very important type of story is the everyday heroes. Now, my brother played on David Bowie's Heroes, and we deliver presentations called How to Be a Hero for More Than One Day. And brother says there are three types of heroes. There are the occasional hero, and we all hear this story. Someone will run in front of a bus and grab a child back before they get run over. But that's occasional. Then it isn't consistent. Then every company is full of everyday heroes. These are the people, George, who make a company work. And we are certainly seeing that in challenging times right now. The first responders, the people in hospital, the essential workers. These are everyday heroes who do what is expected of them, plus 10%, without complaint, at great discomfort to themselves. And then there is the superhero, and not every day, not every company has a superhero, because a superhero holds the overview of what's going on in every office, in every floor, in every department. And I recommend all my clients find everyday heroes, the people who well demonstrate how our companies run. I'll give you a couple of specific examples.
Please do.
One, I was helping a newly promoted leader at The Gap. And he had 8 minutes to present. And I said, no pressure, Ed, but you realize in 8 minutes, you are going to prove to everyone, wow, now I see why he got promoted, or have him think, we couldn't have done better than that. And I asked him, who is the audience? Well, it was all the senior leaders of The Gap and 500 Gap managers. I said, what does a Gap manager look like? He said, 24 to 28 years old. I said, you're a 40-something prematurely silver-haired person. And what are you going to talk about? He said, the program where our employees give us ideas to make or save us money. And I said, well, give me some examples. And he gave me a page of statistics. I said, Ed, statistics aren't necessarily sexy. We have to make them that way. Numbers can be numbing. What is the story behind the statistics? And this is leaders, you give us statistics. What's the story behind? So he researched and he came back. And my favorite story was a little guy who worked in the mailroom. And one day he found he was sending 8 FedEx packets to the same location with the same item inside the company newsletter. And he thought, why don't I ask the person sending them out if I can combine them into one with a note to distribute the other end? When he got the okay, he walked over to the other people. He said, hey guys, if you find you're sending multiple items to the same location, it just at least ask if we can combine them. Because after all, we own stock in the Gap. We don't own stock in FedEx. George, that one idea saved the company $200,000 in 1 year.
Wow.
And I said, now you have to answer the questions. What did you do with the money? It's 17 miles of shelving. So he gave specific examples of what you do with the money you save.
So there's a story of a little guy.
An everyday guy who went beyond. Rather than do what he saw, he questioned, this seems dumb. I might not have the authority to do it, but I can certainly pick up the phone and say, hey, John, do you know you're sending these to the same place?
So we heard one place for the leader to find stories is they're in their own background, but another, perhaps more fertile field is within the organization to look for the everyday heroes that we don't necessarily realize are heroes.
Exactly. And they're around. And I have several clients. And every year I say, what heroes are we demonstrating? Now, here's another brilliant idea, George. And I would like to have told you it was my idea. My last keynote that I was to delivering before we all got locked down was for a regular client, but a different division. This was supply chain. And they're going through, like many companies, transformation. And they analyzed that business storytelling was a very important skill they needed to develop. And they said, you know, these are great, smart people, but they're mostly coming from an engineering background. They're not in sales. They don't tell stories. Well, rather than the keynote, which was then canceled, and I had been paid for it, I said, but we can do this virtually. And they came back, and what they had done, which was not my idea, however, I'm recommending it to all our clients and your listeners. One of their leaders, there were 80 people, they cut them into 10 teams of 8, and they gave them a challenge. Pretend it is 2 years from now. Look back to a different part of the company that you work in and write a TED talk on how the heroic actions of this team help their customers. Because this is a company that much of what they do would be considered essential. And they looked back at what they were doing now with future vision, and they wrote these TED Talks, and one person from each team delivered it. So what I did, and my point of this is sometimes, George, virtual presentations are more valuable than in person, because a keynote would have been great with ideas, but it really wouldn't be roll up our sleeves and make it work for them. So I looked at all the TED Talks. I had them transcribed. I looked at all the Fripp techniques that would improve them. I rewrote many of the openings and the closes. And then we had a 90-minute virtual presentation where I gave them all my best storytelling principles. I realized by watching these TED Talks, they also needed some ideas on how you should structure a talk. So we went through a little of that process. Then I went over all 10 presentations with suggestions, and they'd all watched them, so they were familiar. What they are now doing is now taking my suggestions, rewriting a segment of their talk, which I did not rewrite, have a different person present, and our next meeting, 10 people will deliver a couple of paragraphs of their redone TED talk. And I, of course, want them to look like superheroes, so I will coach them all in advance. And I said to them, you know, if I had billed you for the project you're actually getting, it would have been twice as much as a keynote. However, my point is, the process of learning presentation skills, it's not listening to a speech. It's not a one-day process. It is an ongoing process of improvement and new ideas that you implement, which is why you're doing a great service with this podcast.
Now, I'm glad you point that point out there, because too many people believe that the public speaking, presentation, that it's a natural talent, that some people are good and some people are bad. And the ones who are bad or realize they're bad, and some people are bad and they don't realize that, but they think there's no help. But in fact, you just pointed out that it is a process. And what do you find are, when you're working with people and you're taking them to another level in their presentation, what do you find are the triggers that help them get through that development process? What is it that they have to realize and then do differently so that they can get to the next stage? Because they don't go from here to there. It's one little step at a time. What are those triggers?
Well, first is your understanding, your self-realization. I have received dozens of times people who say, I'm not a good speaker. I have spent my entire career running away from speaking opportunities. However, now I got promoted. I have to give this important speech. And I always ask them, if I may ask, how old are you? And I often hear something like 56. I said, why on earth didn't you find someone like me when you're in your 20s? So one, first of all, you can't go back, you can only go forward. So one, stop telling yourself you're not a good speaker or you're a terrible speaker. You are programming into yourself what you don't want. What you are is an untrained speaker. How can you expect to be good at anything if you haven't been trained? So one, then, let's look at what is your message. Now understand how you structure your message. It's your intended message is built on a premise. What is the big idea? All right, well, what are your talking points that are going to make your case? Now let's come up with a good opening. Let's try a couple of ways. And I tell all my clients, and it's true, look, becoming a charismatic speaker is not rocket science. It is, however, to do it well, more complex than most people realize, which is why you and I, George, have a good business. However, learning to be a nuclear engineer, learning to be what you are, was a lot tougher than it is to be a good speaker. So what you have to do is just, let's trust the process. Let's teach you the principles, put them in your presentation. And when you see that it works, let's keep going. Because there are three speeches everyone gives. The one you intend to give, the one that came out of your mouth, that when you review it, the next one will be better. So it is a process. So it's stop beating yourself up, learn how to do it, understanding, it's not as tough as you think. The principles in one discipline are the same as the principles in the other discipline. So whatever you've done to be good at your job, a lot of that is going to apply to learning to be a great speaker.
Patricia, were you a natural? Did you just suddenly come out of the womb with this great speech in you? You had this wonderful keynote story. What happened? What's your journey?
Yeah. I grew up at the end of World War II, yeah, I was born after the war. However, my parents used to tell us stories about how Winston Churchill would get on the radio and with the power of his words, encourage a nation who at night had to go in air raid shelters and hear bombs being dropped, who would have to queue up for an hour. And for those who don't know what queuing up is, it's standing in line in an orderly fashion with no pushing and shoving for an hour to get one orange. And if you had asked me last year, George, when did you decide to be a professional speaker? I would say when I was 32 years old at my first National Speakers Association convention. If you ask me now, it would be just like my executives, where I'm going back to find the first point, the moment that they were destined. And now I realize, when I was a little girl, I was having programmed into me the power of words. And nobody had your intended message crafted more than Winston Churchill in those wartime speeches. And he worked at it. Yes, he might have been natural, but he worked at it. And then I took Dale Carnegie and Toastmasters like many. I would say I have been good at two professions. One, hairstyling, which was my first job, and second, speaking that went into coaching. I did not start either with great talent. I started with an interest in, a commitment to be good at them, and a personality that was suited to both. Obviously, if you're a hairstylist, if you're outgoing and to talk to people easily, it's going to be more likely you're going to do well. An introverted hairstylist might be good, but most clients like to talk to the hairstylist, so you'd be at a disadvantage. And many of our colleagues are analytical introverted types. I believe it's easier for us, those who can walk up to strangers and say, hi, thanks for coming to this session, and schmooze with them before you walk on stage, which is a technique I have always used and always taught. It's what I call the schmooze factor. Be your own warm-up act. Because, George, as I know you tell your clients, if you walk on stage and you've been sitting either backstage or you've been sitting down and now you walk up to stage, it's very difficult to go from nothing to presentation mode. So I've always found if I can talk to my audience and schmooze, one, you are reaching out and they feel, wow, she's a real person. She's interested in me. But also I am warming up my voice and my body so that when I do hit the stage, I am more in tune, ready to be on stage.
Patricia, when you coach executives and leaders, if there's three top pieces of advice that you might give them, if you're just, let's say that you know you've worked with them and you're sending them off, and there were three points you want to remind them about, what might be those three pieces of advice?
Okay. One, who is your audience? Don't talk about this strategy is good for the shareholders unless all the employees are shareholders. You know, the number one principle of any good presentation is that the audience is interested in your subject. And so therefore, everyone has to deliver their presentation from the point of view of the audience. I say speak as an audience advocate. So these strategies are going to work because they're going to be good for sales. Everyone's bonus, everyone's job is secure. As an extra, yeah, the shareholders will be happy. But frankly, if I'm concerned about feeding my family, I'm not so concerned as what is the chance my increase in salary is coming, because it's now easier to sell. So that's one. Focus on who the audience is. Two, you've got to have some good stories, because stories explain the complex. Stories are the best way to teach and motivate, inspire, and come out with a great opening and a great close. For example, when I was talking to the executive who was talking about the strategy, when I first met him, I said, if you had one sentence rather than 45 minutes, what would you say? He said, this is a brand new company. I said, good, I want you to walk out and say, welcome to a brand new company. I said, who decided it would be a new company? It wasn't them, it was the board of directors. Well, where was your meeting? In Paris, in the boardroom. Well, who said what to whom? Well, Arnold, who'd been on the board for 10 years, said, Bernard, how can we once and forever grab the market share? And he said, I told him we can do this, or the boldest move ever and buy our competition, which is what they've done, which led to the importance of this presentation and why he had to be a rock star and why he had to excite the audience, because 40% of those 1,500 salespeople had not chosen to work for the company. They had been acquired. And you know, George, when anyone's acquired, they are terrified. We don't know who this new owner is. We don't know if we're going to have the same boss. We don't know if we're going to have the same territory. If we're going to have to move, will we even have a job? What is the pay going to be like? So that the odds were really important with this presentation. So that, and lucky for me, and we all know as speech coaches, George, when you have a client who understands the importance, they might stay the 4 hours. In fact, people were putting their head around, he's been with Patricia for 5.5 hours. And in the end, they came in and they said, look, we canceled your last meeting. You have to come now. And he said to me, when can we work together again? And he lived in Paris. And this was long before Zoom and WebEx. I drove down to San Jose, stayed overnight, and they gave me a key to get in the back door of a secure building. So at 6 o'clock in the morning, which meant his admin had to be in at 5:30, I would video conference with him in Paris. But George, I wish you could have been there. Sitting in the front row at the Bellagio Hotel. And out he came. He was funny. He was profound. He was inspiring. And he had 4 slides. And everyone leapt to their feet at the end. And walking out in the coffee break, I heard people say, what happened to Bernard? And I knew, he's been fripnotized.
Fripnotized. <Yeah. laughs> Patricia, here's something that I hope the viewers and listeners notice. Not only have you emphasized the importance of using stories and helping people develop their stories, but you use stories as your own tool to instruct and help, and most importantly, place people in the scene. Because I'm seeing that, I'm seeing the Bellagio. Yeah.
Exactly. And you mentioned when we're kids, we love stories. And I get the gentleman who was working for The Gap, I asked him, do you have any kids at home? An 8-year-old daughter. And I said, I want you to go home and practice your stories on her. I want you to say, Daddy's going to tell you some stories about some interesting people he works with. And I said, I want you to be so good that every time she hears the car drive in, she's going to run out and say, Daddy, 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 tell me some more stories about those interesting people you work with. Because if you can keep the attention of an 8-year-old, there is a vague possibility you can keep the attention of 524 to 28-year-old Gap managers.
Yes. And no 8-year-old ever said, tell me that sales pitch again.
Exactly.
But they say, tell me another story. Tell me another story. Patricia, I'm going to finish with this last question. I've heard you emphasize the importance of a strong opening and techniques you've used. Tell us about techniques to close a presentation. What are good ways to end?
All right, once you have your presentation together and you've gone through, then there's a formula, and I suggest you have a rhetorical question based on the premise or the big idea. So you might say, so why is our strategy sound? Because we are at the right place at the right time in our new technology is better than the competition. Because we have welcomed 40% new enthusiastic sales professionals, we will soon be the market leader because of the innovations in. So you go back to the central theme, the premise, the big idea, the idea you're introducing, you review your key points, and then you have to challenge them to take action. Now that you know the why, I challenge you to be part of the how. And then you might go back to an earlier part in the speech. So you might say, now that you understand the power of why we are a brand new company, the future is bright, let's move together, or something like that. And then almost as if you are finishing, you're ready to walk away, your last words linger. One pithy point. And it would not be a new idea. It would be, perhaps, it would be when you're equally matched at a disadvantage. Strategy wins. The one idea, again, not new, it is burned into their mind.
And to our listeners and viewers, I speak to you now that you've heard Patricia Fripp talk about the importance and the power of stories. Now you know to go and find and develop your stories and deliver them when you want to get across your intended message.
If you like what you heard, remember to like, comment, and share this podcast. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.